The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So a few weeks ago, someone asked me if I would talk about karma someday, so that's what I'm going to talk about today. And I talked a little bit about it last week when we talked about intention and motivation with respect to mindful speech. So those of you who were here last week had a little bit of an intro to this topic. So it often seems to us, I think, in our lives that we are responding and reacting to things in the world, and that we don't often feel like we have that much of a choice in how we respond. That something happens in the world and we get angry or we get resentful, or something happens in the world and it makes us very happy. So this reactivity to the world seems to be something that is out of our control a lot of the time. And this is much of the reason why we actually end up suffering, why we end up frustrated, unhappy, dissatisfied. And our habit or pattern is to try to figure out how to fix the world so that it will be in a state that makes us happy. So this reactivity, based on essentially what our habits and patterns, are, based on our conditioning, based on how we were raised, we have these various ways that we respond to the world. And so much of that conditioning is so deep that it is kind of below the level of our conscious awareness, which is why it feels like it comes and is not controllable, because our responses are kind of happening automatically at a level below which we can usually be aware. And this is a huge part of the reason why we suffer, because there are our habits and patterns are like momentum. They're like this momentum of ways that we behave, and because we have behaved in those ways for so long, we tend to behave in those ways. We tend to react in that way. We tend to respond to things in certain ways because we have cultivated the habit or pattern of responding in that way. So in the teachings of the Buddha, the answer to the question of why we suffer is a lot to do with these choices that are kind of under the radar, beyond our current level of awareness. And his explanation, the Buddha's explanation of this, is described in his teaching on karma. So what is karma exactly? It's actually a term that's often misunderstood in our culture. It's been brought into the common everyday parlance of our language. People talk about karma. Oh, that's your karma. And actually, it's not talked about in, it's not usually used in the way that it is usually meant in the Buddhist tradition. So I want to clarify what karma means. I don't think this is a direct quote from Bhikkhu Bodhi, but it's a paraphrase of Bhikkhu Bodhi's definition. Karma is the capacity of our intentional actions to produce a morally appropriate result. So that's a kind of a definition. What does that mean? The capacity of our intentional actions to produce a morally appropriate result. It means that most of our actions come from some kind of an intention. And this is part of what I talked about last week, that whenever we do something, whether it's an action of body, an action of speech, or an action of our mind, so whether we're moving, we're speaking, or thinking and feeling emotions, there is some kind of an intention that propels that action. So that's the intention itself is kind of this energetic impulse that pushes our action forward. You can almost think of it like the energy of the intention is moved from the mind into the body, or from the mind into the speech, or from the mind into an emotion or thought. Almost as if you have a soccer ball and you kick the soccer ball, the motion of your leg, the energy in your leg, is transmitted to the soccer ball, and the soccer ball moves. So it's kind of in that way that it's the energetic movement, the karma, the intention has an energetic movement that's transferred into the action. Now so this is the capacity of our intentional actions to kind of move us in a direction. And the teaching on karma indicates that it's a direction that responds to the kind of direction of the intention leads to the direction of the result. And as Bhikkhu Bodhi says, it's a morally appropriate result. So when we are motivated, when our intentions come about and they are motivated by unskillful actions that are rooted in greed, aversion, and delusion, the result tends to be suffering. And if we are engaging in actions that are motivated, the intention is motivated out of wholesome emotions, wholesome states of non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion, or to put it in the positive, of generosity, of kindness, and of wisdom. If our motivations are out of generosity, kindness, and wisdom, the results of that movement tend to go towards non-suffering, happiness. So again, this is like the direction of, it's like the direction of the energetic impulse. If you kick the soccer ball from this side, it's going to go that way. If you kick the soccer ball from this side, if you kick the soccer ball from this side, it's going to tend to go that way. If you kick the soccer ball from this side, it's going to tend to go that way. So the tendency of the direction of the movement is what is meant by karma. It's the tendency or the kind of impulse of movement in a direction. It's not. So the karma is the, as Bhikkhu Bodhi says, the capacity. So it's kind of that energy behind our intentions. So the example of the soccer ball, you know, you kick the ball and it goes immediately. You kick the ball and the energy is transferred immediately into a result. So you the karma in that case would kind of just be the energetic impulse that's transferred from the leg to the ball. And then the result of that is that the ball goes in a certain direction, or that it tends to go in a certain direction. The result is that directionality. Now in karma, the result of our intentions, the result of that acting out of greed, aversion, or delusion may or may not produce an immediate result. So the result of karma, there's two aspects to karma. There's the karma, which is that intention and that directionality of how we engage. If we're engaging out of greed, aversion, and delusion, the directionality of the results of the karma tends to go towards suffering. So there's the karma, which is the directionality, and there's the result. So the result of karma is essentially what we are experiencing in the moment. The state of our body and mind in this moment is the result of choices that we've made in the past. The karma, so the karma of the next moment is how we choose to respond to this moment. So we can, based on what's happening in our body and mind, through mindfulness, choose, hopefully more skillfully, to respond to what is happening in our body and mind. So the teaching is that when karma, that when the conditions are appropriate in the world, the karma will ripen into its result. When the karma of the intention and the motivation ripens into its result, if it is coming out of an intention of greed, aversion, or delusion, the feeling of the result will tend to be painful, will tend to be suffering. If the result of the karma is based on or coming out of an intention that was motivated by non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion, the result will tend to be happiness. So there's typically a confusion on the term karma. One of the main confusions, I think, is that when people speak use the term karma in a day-to-day way, they're usually saying something like, when you experience something, oh, you've had this thing happen to you, it's your karma. They're talking about the result of karma. I mean, so they're applying karma to mean the result of karma. So that's a piece I wanted to clear up. The distinction between karma, which is that directionality, and the result of karma. Now, the results of karma are not deterministic. This is a piece that was a way in which the Buddha diverged from some of the teachers of his day. That he has this understanding that karma basically is a teaching on cause and effect. That when things happen, when the cause in our mind, the intentional cause in our mind, is motivated by greed, aversion, or delusion, the effect tends to be suffering. And in his day, the teaching on cause and effect tended to be a deterministic teaching, that if there was a cause, then the effect was such and such. So, for example, if you were a murderer, then the result would be that you would go to hell, something like that, you know, in a very simplistic way, thinking about this. And the Buddha said that's not the case, that karma is much more fluid than that, that essentially we can, that again, the teaching is that the direction of the karma is based in what it's motivated by: greed, aversion, or delusion, or non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion. But there are many other conditions in the world and in our mind stream that impacts how that karma is experienced, how that the result of that karma is experienced. So there's a teaching from one of the suttas. The Buddha says, for anyone who says, in whatever way a person makes karma, that is how it is experienced, there is no living of the holy life. There is no opportunity for the ending of suffering. So what he's saying is that if there's a deterministic teaching, that if there's a deterministic law happening, that if you kill, you will go to hell, if it's that deterministic, then there's no opportunity. He's saying that that kind of a law would prevent people from becoming free of suffering. And he says, for anyone who says, when a person makes karma to be felt in such and such a way, that is how its result is experienced, there is the living of the holy life. So the distinction here is that in the first case, it's that there's a, given an action, there's a specific result. Given that you've killed somebody, there's a specific result. Or given that you've become angry, there's a specific result. Or given that you've become frustrated, there's a specific result of that. That there's no navigation around the result. That given a particular state of mind, a particular action, a particular result is bound to happen. The distinction here is that the Buddha says when a person makes karma to be felt in such a way, so it's when a person makes karma that is tend, so it's, this is where it's the teaching of tending towards, that if you are angry, it will tend to make you suffer. So this is kind of like looking at, and this is the analogy breaks down a little bit, but I'll go a little further with it. With the soccer ball, you kick the soccer ball this way, it tends to go that direction. But if there's a strong wind blowing that way, it's going to kind of go in that direction. So there are other conditions out there that can mitigate the directionality of the karma. And the majority of those conditions that mitigate the directionality of the karma have to do with our own minds, have to do with the choices that we make moment to moment. The other piece in this same teaching that the Buddha goes on to say is, there's the case where a trifling evil deed done by a certain individual takes him to hell. There is the case where the very same sort of trifling evil deed done by another individual is experienced here and now, and for the most part barely appears for a moment. And he claims, or he says, that the reason behind that has to do with the, essentially the state of mind of the person who did that trifling evil deed. If that person has a strong history of multiple, acts of hostility, of breaking the precepts of engaging in killing, stealing, lying, etc. If that person has a strong field of that in their mind already, then a trifling evil deed may indeed take them in the direction of great suffering. This is kind of like, you're kicking the ball in this direction where the wind is blowing in that direction. You know, it's like the directionality of the kick that you give it is augmented by the directionality of the wind, and it really travels in that direction. So the climate in which that action is made affects the result. Now, if you kick the ball in that direction, so it's tending towards suffering, but there's a strong wind blowing this direction, then the momentum of that ball in that direction is barely going to even be felt. So likewise, if you have a strong container in your mind and body of wholesome behavior, then the result of that trifling, unskillful deed will have a minimal impact. He goes on to compare. Suppose a man were to drop a salt crystal into a small amount of water in a cup. Would the water in the cup become salty because of the salt crystal? A small amount of water and put some salt in it, it becomes unfit to drink. But then he goes on to say, if you had a big lake of water, of pure water, and put that same amount of salt in there, would you notice the salt? No. If you took a glass of water out of that lake, you wouldn't notice the salt. And again, this is again talking about the container or the kind of where you are in the moment. The conditions of what you have cultivated impact how your actions produce results. So in that way, the karma, the result of karma, is not deterministic. There's a very famous sutta that I like to reflect on from time to time, and it's the sutta of Angulimala, who was a mass murderer at the time of the Buddha. And he had murdered 999 people. And the Buddha, he was terrorizing the whole of that part of India at the time. And the king had decided they needed to catch him and punish him. I don't know whether they were going to put him to death or not, but they were going to catch him and punish him. And the Buddha, having heard about this person, looked at his mind through his powers of mind. The story goes that he kind of surveyed the Angulimala's mind stream and determined that he had the capacity to become awakened. And so he went and kind of put himself in Angulimala's path to kind of tempt him in a way to become, to be his, so that he would have the Buddha be his next victim, so that he would be chasing the Buddha. And the Buddha, by some magical feats, managed to stop Angulimala's mind and point out to him what he'd been doing. So this is a very brief summary of the story. And so, to make a very long story short, Angulimala realized that he needed to stop the killing and ordain as a monk under the Buddha and learn what the Buddha had to teach. So he did. And he became fully awakened by practicing the teachings of the Buddha, by bringing mindfulness to his experience. Now, I can only imagine how difficult that must have been, given what he had been doing. How painful it must have been to sit in the middle of remembering all those memories of, you know, people he had murdered coming up over and over again. But he sat and he engaged with the awareness and became completely awakened. Now, after he became completely awakened, it said he went on alms rounds. And people in the village, of course, remembered him as a murderer. But he was a monk, so they, you know, didn't want to, kill him or anything. But they didn't treat him very nicely. They would, like, throw things at him and didn't give him much food. He came back to the Buddha. Angulimala came back to the Buddha and reported this to him. The Buddha said, "Bear it, Angulimala. You are suffering here and now in a minor way for that which you might have dwelt for thousands of years in hell." That basically, he was experiencing the results of his karma as these like minor cuts and bruises that he got from people throwing things at him, as opposed to the teaching of the next life being one of being in hell. So this teaching I find to be very interesting because it points to, so not only does the way in which we have behaved in the past influence how the directionality of our karma here and now. So what the result tends to be is based on how we are behaving here and now, or how we have behaved in the past. So the choices we make here and now, their directionality is augmented or mitigated by how we have chosen in the past. And this teaching of Angulimala, what it says is, our choices here and now, going forward, can shift the direction of the kind of karma that we have done in the past. The kind of directionality of the karma that we have engaged in our past. So for Angulimala, the directionality of the karma was towards suffering. And the Buddha intervened and pointed out to him, you need to stop, you need to pay attention to what's happening. And he did that. So his choices in the present moment became skillful choices from that point on. And those skillful choices had the power to essentially transmute the result of the karma that he would have experienced from drastic suffering to minor suffering. Now, it doesn't, according to the teaching of the Buddha, the result of unwholesome actions will have to be experienced at some point as suffering. So the result of Angulimala having killed so many people did have to be experienced as some kind of suffering. The distinction here is that it's not deterministic. Our choices in the present moment can guide us towards a more happy outcome, a less suffering outcome. So to me, this really points to, again, the present moment. Because the only place where we have any kind of possibility of choice, of any kind of a possibility of seeing what our intentionality is in this moment. The things that we've done in the past, the choices we've made in the past, have taken us here to where we are and have kind of set a directionality to our lives. And yet, through mindfulness practice, we can essentially, the way I like to think about it is that we can lower the horizon of what is often considered to be the subconscious. So that, you know, it's usually we're kind of up to here in our subconscious, that there's all of these choices that we make, the habits, the patterns, our choices are kind of happening below the level of what, where we have conscious control over them. And as we engage in mindfulness, we start to realize that we can actually see these choices. We can actually see when we are motivated out of greed, aversion, and delusion, and when we are motivated out of generosity, kindness, and wisdom. So through this practice of observing our experience moment to moment, we begin to lower that horizon of the subconscious and the choices that are typically thought to be below that level of subconsciousness come above that surface, kind of like the water level is getting lower, and the things that were the choices that we made that were hard to see become revealed. They're revealed. They can be seen through this practice of looking at our experience in the moment. One of the best places to look at this is a thing I suggested in the guided meditation, looking at pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. When we look at what's pleasant and unpleasant, we see often that when something is unpleasant, we typically respond or react in a habitual way. We want to get rid of that thing. We want to get ourselves out of here. There's aversion. There's dislike. There's this pushing away experience. So that's a habit, essentially, that when something is unpleasant, we react in that way, sometimes out of anger, sometimes out of aversion, sometimes out of hostility, sometimes out of fear. There's a reaction that happens. And what we begin to see is that in the bringing mindfulness to our experience, we can actually notice, oh, that's an unpleasant experience. And in the noticing of the unpleasant experience, we might start to see some of the automatic reactions or some of the reactions that are coming out. And over time, it doesn't necessarily happen immediately, over time we start to be able to choose, essentially. We see that the direction of our mind is headed, you know, it's like, oh, that thing's unpleasant, and we feel this momentum towards anger and frustration. That's kind of like the intention, that the directionality of our minds is headed in that direction. In seeing that, there's the possibility to let it go. There's that possibility. Now, it doesn't necessarily happen immediately or every time that we even see it. Sometimes when we see a direction of our minds, when we see that we're angry and that we're going to do something out of anger, the momentum of that anger, because of the history, because of the conditioning, it's essentially the momentum of the anger is strong. And the mindfulness that we bring to it can't really change the direction that it's going, but it can be aware of it. And in the being aware of it, what essentially is happening is that we are feeling and understanding the choice that was made and feeling and understanding the result of that choice. So we both feel the karma itself, that directionality of the karma itself, and we understand clearly its result. That's a huge part of how the teaching, the practice works, actually. That as the mind understands, because it's like we're training our minds, it's not me or I that am trained. It's kind of the way the mind understands things. That if the mind begins to understand that these choices tend to lead us towards suffering, when the mind sees a choice that will tend to lead it towards suffering, and it sees the possibility of that choice, when we see choices, we do not have to act on them. And essentially, it's the mind itself that makes that choice. The mind, it's not an I, actually, that does it. The mind sees there's a choice of anger that will tend to lead me towards suffering. And understanding the result of that direction, the mind can just simply let go. It's like it knows, it sees that direction will produce suffering for me. So it tends to, over time, begin to let it go through mindfulness. So essentially, we use mindfulness to begin to shape skillful directions to our lives. And the point where that direction is created is in the present moment, and it has to do with the motivation behind our actions. So if you can, last week we did this exercise around speaking, beginning to look at, can we pause before we speak and see what's our motivation for speaking? We can do the same thing before movement. Can we pause before we move and see if we can notice the motivation for movement? It's even possible, it's not so much possible to pause before we think, but through becoming more and more mindful of what is happening in our minds begin to see itself, the mind begins to see, oh, I'm inclining towards anger. There's a thought that has appeared in my mind, and I'm ready to think thoughts to make myself angry about that person that's come up in my mind. So we can see that inclination towards anger in our minds. So this looking at choice and learning how to make skillful choices is essentially the seed or a kind of main kernel of how the Buddha taught we can extricate ourselves from suffering and lead ourselves towards happiness. This is the key point. It happens in the present moment, which is partly why it's so profound to bring mindfulness into the present moment. So I want to leave some time for discussion, because this is often a topic that is curious or confusing or something, so I want to make sure there's time for discussion.
Morning.
Good morning.
I like the way you, instead of saying actions that are good or bad, you say skillful. And that takes quite a bit of judgment away. There's still a touch of that, but that's, I think, a healthy way. One of the things is that, and I totally believe that our past actions bring us to the moment we're in, but I've heard of karma as being kind of past life things that happen that we have no control over. And I don't understand that. I understand what you said today, but I don't understand this other thing.
So yes, the whole teaching, there's a whole huge teaching on karma and rebirth. And that was the next topic I thought of talking about if there weren't too many questions. So I'll go into it a little bit here. That is also part of the understanding of the teaching of karma, is that the whole kind of motivation, or not the motivation, the directionality of our life stream is created through the choices of the past. And that past does not simply look, the teaching doesn't look at it simply as beginning with birth. It looks at it as beginning in a previous life or multiple previous lives. And essentially, you know, if you think about what, it's not that much different in terms of the way the mind stream is understood in the Buddhist teaching, because, you know, you were born and you've come to this point in your life, and you can't change what you've done since you were born until now, right? I mean, can't change that. So that's got you going in a certain direction. All that you can do now is step into the next moment with hopefully as much skill as possible. So the teaching around rebirth is, you know, essentially, you know, that the mind stream that's moving in a direction doesn't begin with birth and end with death. That it's essentially, again, it's very much just that kind of energetic movement of a life stream of consciousness. So the question often is misunderstood about rebirth, because rebirth often people think of as being a self is reborn or something is reborn. And that is not the teaching in Buddhism. It's essentially that in our life, if we think about just in this life, just moment to moment, what's happening in this life, moment to moment, the understanding in the Buddhist teaching is that moment to moment, there is an arising of experience and a passing away of experience. And the next moment, there's a rising of experience and passing away of experience, including the experience of body and mind. And there's the karma or the choices that we've made kind of incline that directionality of moments of experience in a particular direction. So there's no particular self there that goes even from moment to moment. It's just body and mind coming and passing. It's a process. It's a process. It's kind of like a river. You know that there's the channel of the river gives a directionality to the river, but you can't really pick up the river and say, this is the river. You know, you pick up a bucket of water and it's like, that's not the river. Or you look at, you know, you walk into the river at any particular place and what's flowing around you is continually changing. It's similar to that in our life stream experience, that there is not anything there. It's just a changing flow of experience. And yet there is that changing flow and there is a directionality to it, which is defined by karma. The idea of a previous life, it can also be understood, there's an analogy that's used actually in the suttas around lighting a lamp. And so, you know, you've got a lamp that's lit and if you've got a whole string of lamps, and you use that first lamp to light the second lamp, and then the first lamp goes out, that flame is dependent on, there's kind of an energetic movement from the previous flame, but it's not the same flame. It's got new conditions that it's burning under. It's got a new wick. It's got new oil. And yet there's some kind of dependence from one to the next. And then there's the, you know, if you take that flame and light another one, you just keep propagating the energy of the flame to new conditions. And that's the way that the previous lives are understood, and that the momentum from previous lives is essentially, it's just the same as it is from moment to moment in this life. Now, in my own experience, I don't have any confirming evidence of past lives. And for me, that part of the teaching is something I hold kind of with a light touch. It's not something, the Buddha didn't say I had to believe things. But the teaching of karma here and now is extremely clear to me of how it works and how the choices shape the future, and how the choices can alter the directionality of our lives. And, you know, the idea that perhaps it was a life stream that began before I was born, I don't know. I mean, but, you know, if you think of it, it's just this, it's the same process. It's not a different process that's talked about in terms of the karma impacting this life from the previous life than it is that is impacting our life now from the past 10 or 15 years of life. It's the same process, exactly. So it's from that standpoint, that's not hard for me to understand. You know, that it's just a kind of a longer time scale. And likewise, the rebirth understanding with karma is that the directionality of our future lives is determined by the choices that we are making now and the kind of directionality that has come with us from the past. So does that help at all?
Yes, it does help.
Thank you.
Did I have this on?
It is on, yes. Anyone else?
So I think I understand what you were saying about the karma and the motivation of the intention. I guess it's not always easy to see where our intentions are coming from and spotting the intentions behind the actions. And it, you know, looking back on things that you do, you could be doing some revisionist history and coming up with what your intentions were. Can you say anything about understanding the intentions?
Understanding the moment to moment?
Yeah.
So the way for me into this is very much to bring mindfulness, as much mindfulness as possible, moment to moment. That it's the moment-to-moment continuity of awareness that begins to reveal what's happening. So a lot of times when I teach, I have a talk called What Versus Why, you know, that, you know, a lot of times in our experience or in our thinking about things, we want to understand why something is happening. And so we think back and we reflect on it and we think, well, I did that and I did that and I did that. And that kind of exploration is not actually that helpful from this perspective. That it, you know, that what is more helpful for us is to look at what's actually happening right now. That right now we can see what is our experience in our body and mind? Are we in a state of pleasantness or unpleasantness? Is our mind angry or frustrated or happy or whatever is happening right now? And in that witnessing of that, we can begin to see what our choices are for this moment into the next moment. So that's the only place we have any opportunity to step into this stream of karma and change the direction of the battleship, essentially. You know, that this moment is the place that we have that opportunity. We cannot revise our choices in the past. They have brought us here, and the way to explore our intentions now is to actually, my experience is to look at what is happening here and now. In the observing what is happening here and now, we will begin to see what our choices are. Because what is happening here and now includes this kind of arising of intention and motivation. And so we can begin to see the why of the present moment through looking at what is happening in the present moment. And that exploration of just looking at what's happening, what's happening, what's happening, just what's happening now, what's happening now, what's happening now. If the more continuous and the more clear that we can be, we can start to actually see those choices. And then there are some places that we can kind of stop ourselves and look. What's my action? What's my motivation here in the moment? You know, like before speech. So pausing before speaking. If you can do that, if you can pause before speaking, you have caught the motivation to speak, or you've caught the intention to speak. Because you know, oh, I'm about ready to speak. And in that moment of pausing, you might recognize what the motivation is. You might see, oh, I'm getting ready to speak to be helpful. Or I'm getting ready to speak to make myself look good. Or I'm getting ready to speak because I'm a little angry at this person. I want to twist into them. So you can see, if you can, through the mindfulness, inject pauses at key points, you can also begin to kind of highlight or turn towards, and what's my motivation here? So pausing before speaking is a good one. And then we can begin to get familiar with this quality of intention before action through exploring particularly, like, you know, motivations for changing posture. And I like to call that kind of training wheels. It's like, you know, mostly when we're motivated to change posture, it's not like there's some either major wholesome or unwholesome motivation. They're like, oh, I need to go to the bathroom. I've got to get up to go to the bathroom. That's the motivation, you know, kind of a neutral motivation. But we can start to see, if we engage in an exploration of posture changing, we can start to recognize, oh, I can see I'm going to move before I move, and I can know why. So we can start to recognize that we can actually see our motivations. And that begins to kind of support the mind's ability to recognize it in other scenarios. Another thing that you can check into This for me becomes more helpful the longer I practice. And that's to kind of just track my inner emotional gut feeling of ease and agitation. If there's kind of an agitation that's coming up, it's kind of like, highlight what's going on here. You know, what's... You know, sometimes that agitation might mean a kind of a reaction that's happened to something, and it may begin to motivate, that agitation might begin to motivate the next thing. And so to kind of highlight that agitation, and, okay, you know, what's happening here? Do I need to kind of be careful about what's happening? So those are a few thoughts about exploring the intention. It's a present moment phenomenon that's most helpful. It sometimes can be interesting to look back at history, and I've seen myself that there have been insights that have arisen around kind of past history. And the support that that has given has not so much been that, oh, I understand now why I behave this way, or I understand now why this pattern arises because of something that happened from, you know, long ago. It's not that it stops the pattern from arising because it's understood where it was originated from, but it does kind of make it a little easier to recognize it as just a pattern that was created by causes and conditions. So there's a little less identification with it, which makes it then easier to be present with when it comes up. So that kind of reflection on past history, which a lot is done through psychotherapy, et cetera, that kind of thing, can be helpful as a way to be able to be with the fear as it comes up now, the frustration as it comes up now, because it's like, okay, this is just a habit that's been in effect for a long time, and you know, I don't have to just be at the mercy of it, I can just observe it. So that understanding where things came from historically can be helpful, at least in my experience, in terms of disidentifying with the pattern a little bit. Thank you. So it's pretty much time to stop now. So thank you for your attention.